Hey, it's Canzano. Thanks for making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe and leave us some feedback. Also, the podcast is brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic, dedicated to providing breakthrough, non-invasive, drug-free solutions to ED problems. Call Multnomah Medical Clinic at 503-899-4199 or visit them online at multnomahmedical.com.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. B-F-T. Live from the home studios presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the Bald-Faced Truth.
He's a legend. Southern California, voice of the Chargers, voice of the people, sports fans. He's got his finger on the pulse of a lot of things, including the Chargers. Lee Hacksaw Hamilton joining us. I told you, Hacksaw, that I might be bugging you because you got Justin Herbert in your stable now. I had no idea he would be this good this early. How's the hysteria going on the Herbert front down there?
Well, nice to talk to you again, John. In all honesty, you know, we're based in San Diego. Justin plays out of L.A. They're not getting a ton of media coverage, but that's understandable in the Los Angeles market right now, only because the Dodgers are still playing after what the Lakers did. So I guess the bottom line for me, because I cover this thing on a day-by-day, game-by-game basis, bottom line for me is that's a fine quarterback, and it's not a fine football team. He's kind of a one-man show. The stage is not too big for him. I think I said that last time I was on, maybe a month ago. Very impressed with his ability to handle everything that NFL defenses throw at him. Not surrounded by a great football team, awful lot of injuries. Chargers just have had a bad history of injuries in the Anthony Lynn era and prior to that in the Mike McCoy era. But the kid's doing well. Now, he has stretches. We're not going to vote him in anybody's Hall of Fame right now. He has stretches where he plays really well, as witnessed by 337 yards passing and 66 yards rushing yesterday against Jacksonville. But he also has stretches where they had 15 yards in total offense in the second quarter of the game yesterday. So, you know, he's doing really well. The one unique thing about him compared to any other rookie quarterback, he's not turning this ball over, and that's the most critical thing. Does he get knocked out of sync a little bit? Yeah. Does he put some balls maybe where he shouldn't put them out of desperation trying to make a play? Yeah, that's being a rookie. But he hasn't fumbled. He's not taken a ton of sacks, hasn't gotten hurt. And he's not throwing the football into really bad coverages very, very often. So if I'm going to give him a letter grade right now, I'd probably give him an A- for where he is. I give the team probably a C because they're just not real good. And, you know, his record, you know, stands at a win and four losses. The reality is that they could have lost opening day to Cincinnati, could have lost yesterday to Jacksonville because they had such bad stretches. But because of Justin Herbert, they've got, you know, two wins, four losses on the season, and a lot of big games still to be played, but I like every facet from what I see with a kid. And I've been on Zoom calls with him. He's intellectual. He's unbelievably humble compared to Baker Mayfield, somebody else. And I'd say right now he is performing the equal of Joe Burrow in Cincinnati, and Burrow's got even less talent around him. And the difference with Joe Burrow is he's taken a pounding. Whereas I think that Herbert's ability to move the pocket, run a little bit, run some RPOs, if you will, has helped him not stand in there and get blasted. Burrow's taken an awful lot of hits through the first six games of the Cincinnati season.
Lee Hacksaw Hamilton is our guest. Is there a chance the Chargers can get better, meaning are there some players who might come back from injury? Or is there some improvement that could be had this season, or is this a off-season talent in general proposition?
Well, they knew, John, when they were going to draft Justin Herbert, that they had to do things to protect him. And they went out and they spent a chunk of money on free agency to get Brian Bulaga from Green Bay. Then they made a trade to get the right guard, Trey Turner, from Carolina. You know, both those guys have been past Pro Bowlers. I think Bulaga's a warrior, but he can't stay on the field. And that's one of the reasons Green Bay just let him walk, because he was always getting hurt. He's had three different injuries in about a six-week span with the Chargers. So, I mean, right tackle's been a void. They're playing a kid from NAIA football. Sioux Falls College is a starting right tackle, and he's getting beat on like a drum. And Trey Turner's got a groin injury and has just never recovered. He's been out at least 3 weeks, not practicing at all. So it's not a good situation. They don't have this Pro Bowl center, Mike Pouncey. They got a new left tackle who's their former right tackle, and he's struggling because he's a little bit undersized, even though he's got great feet. So they tried hard. It just hasn't worked out at this point in time. But Herbert's escapability, I just think, has made a huge difference in him still being healthy and still standing up. And they don't have Austin Eckler. He's gone 6 weeks with a significant hamstring and knee injury. And the wide receiver corps, an awful lot of young kids. They've got speed, but they don't run precise routes. And, you know, Justin's making things happen just because they think he's a really good quarterback. It meant somebody else might have gotten their brains blown out. But he does create on the fly. And, I just think he's dynamic, and I think he's really diverse. And, you know, I know you got a lot of Duck fans that listen to you up and down I-5. I just think this is a hell of an acquisition.
Lee Hacksaw Hamilton with us. The enthusiasm among Charger fans, and it might be hard to measure because, again, they're not in San Diego now, but enthusiasm in general, were there Charger fans who stay with this franchise even though they left, that you can get some degree of measuring the level of enthusiasm for Justin Herbert-led, you know, Chargers organization?
Well, if this franchise were here, this kid would own this town, because that's how San Diego embraces its young stars. Fernando Tatis, the Padres shortstop, owns this town right now just because he had such a great first full season. He's dynamic and he's fun to be around, et cetera, et cetera. So, if it were here, but up there, the Chargers have never been welcomed. They haven't done a lot of things correctly. I don't know if we ever get fans in that new stadium, that this is going to be a good look for the NFL, because I think with Jared Goff and the Rams and Sean McVay, who everybody seems to like, I really think the Rams will be drawing their 72,000. And when the Chargers play there on given home game Sundays, they draw 21,000. How's that going to look for the NFL? So it's just, franchise should have never moved. This is all on the greed of the ownership to move the franchise. Now, fans down here do follow, have about half the TV ratings they used to have. The newspaper runs, and of course, you coming from the Oregonian, newspaper runs strictly cut-and-paste stories from the Los Angeles Times as, quote, Charger game stories. So fans follow it. I think there's a lot of hate watching going on TV. Yeah. I know based on Twitter, there's an awful lot of hate still being directed at the Spanos family, not at the kid quarterback, not at any of the players. You know, the favorite phrase down here was, everybody in San Diego would hope that Phillip Rivers, when he ran that show, would go 16-0, and everybody down here would hope that Dean Spanos, the owner, would go 0-16. So, that's the answer. But I kind of look through a little bit different prism because I love football, love the NFL. I like the storylines of the players, et cetera. I wish that kid were in our town because he would really be popular.
Did it change the Padres in that franchise now becoming sort of like the Blazers in the state of Oregon? Is, you know, it's a tent pole, and a tent pole almost by itself.
That's a really viable question. I'll just spin it back at you. Damian Lillard, what does it mean to Trailblazers? What does it mean to that community?
Yeah.
That's what Tatis has meant to the San Diego Padres. There's an aura around the kid. I hope it never, ever changes. He's only 21. He's unbelievably gifted. There's an intangible impact he's had down here on the Padre baseball franchise, and not a lot of people paid attention. Guys haven't written about it. He has made, just because of his presence and his popularity and his productivity, this wouldn't be happening if the kid was hitting 221 versus 290 with home runs and gold glove abilities at shortstop. That kid has made the big money players play harder and better. Manny Machado makes $30 million a year. Eric Hosmer makes $30 million a year. Will Myers makes $20 million. Each of them the last couple of years have had really miserable seasons in San Diego and kind of came off as if, but we're just glad to be here collecting my paycheck. And if we win, we win. And if we don't, well, I'm still going to get paid. I'll tell you what, Tatis changed the whole persona of Padre baseball. And I think because he had so much good success early and was just pretty rock solid for his first full season after what he did a year ago in just a flash performance, I think he's exerted enormous pressure on those other three veterans who are making all the money on the franchise to come to work and be harder and play with a little bit more passion. So it won't show up in anybody's stat sheet, but that's my read because I'm down there a lot and I've interacted with those guys. And I was offended with the way Machado acted his first year after all the money he got. And Myers has just been an enigma after his first season. He's just never been the same player. But Tatis, I think, made everybody better with his approach to the game, his flair, and his passion just to play it. So it'll be fun going forward. You know, there's an old baseball phrase, John, wait till next year, and that's usually the loser's lament in baseball when your season's finished and you're out of the running and you got buried. Well, down here it's got a different meaning. Wait till next year with the Padres. Maybe this time next year the Padres with all the good young pitching and Tatis and all those other guys, maybe the Padres will be playing in the World Series.
Game 4 of the World Series with the Rays and the Dodgers finished. It looked like a little league game. It was thrilling, though. I came off the couch. I was yelling at the TV. I'm a Giants fan, admittedly, Hacksaw, but I enjoyed seeing the Dodgers blow that game. That said, they are it's murderer's row. That team is complete. It's very difficult to see the Rays coming back, but I'm going to tune in and watch. I think it's a compelling World Series.
It really is. You know, it's there's so many great storylines. I don't know if you're familiar with my big sports website, LeeHacksawHamilton.com, but I write a column every day on a wide variety of things. And I talked about just the storylines with this whole World Series, you know, the Dodgers with a $263 million payroll, and Tampa Bay's payroll would have been $53 million if we played the full season. You talk about all this megastar Hollywood talent on the Dodger roster and the personalities. And I swear to you, before the Fall Classic started, I couldn't find one baseball fan who knew who the hell was on the Tampa Bay roster. And, you know, you talk about Moneyball and you talk about the Dodger way of doing business with metrics. I mean, there's so many diverse things that were kind of unique storylines. But the reality is, John, the Dodger batting order will get you. They'll get you some inning, some rally, some way. And the ball be flying out of the ballpark. Might not be in the first, might be in the fifth, could be in the eighth, but they got so many power hitters, and Mookie Betts is such a pace setter at the top of that lineup. And they got these other guys who can just bomb, and they wear your pitching staff out. But, I mean, how about the statistic? I don't know if you've caught this one. The Dodgers, I believe, going into tomorrow night's game, have scored 59 runs in the postseason with two outs. With two outs. All you need is one more strike and this sucker is over. Are they perfect? No. I think manager Dave Roberts has some issues with decision-making as it relates to pitchers. This goes back not to just this playoff series, when to pull them, when to let them stay, when to go to the bullpen, who you're using coming out of the bullpen. You know, that spilled over from the couple World Series appearances where I thought he really mishandled the pitching staff and it cost the Dodgers in the Fall Classic. But this collectively is a really good team, and even though in San Diego and up in San Francisco they all hate the color Dodger blue, hey, let's be honest, that's a pretty good franchise with a wide variety of talent.
Hacksaw, Dodgers payroll, even with the shortened season, $108 million. Rays payroll, $28
million. Sure.
It's like the Rays should get a runner on second to start every inning.
Yeah, but they're in the Fall Classic because they earned it. You know, and what they've got is that they've got role players in the everyday lineup who are interchangeable, who have been pretty productive. I mean, let's be realistic. They beat up everybody in the American League. Everybody. You know, and that includes the big bomber Yankees with that huge payroll, and that includes the cheats in Houston and the Oakland Athletics and all that. So, I mean, Tampa Bay earned this. It's just a different way of doing business. I made a crack on another talk show I was on just before the series started in L.A., and I made the statement, well, the Rays shouldn't be upset about playing in an empty stadium because nobody goes to see them in the Suncoast Dome anyhow at Tropicana Field because their fan support's just miserable. But I would hope somewhere, and you and I have been doing this a long time, I would hope baseball would find a way to come to an agreement on something that looks like a salary cap. But to me, the wild card in any conversation with a salary cap has to be a floor to spending. It's being done in other sports. It's done in the NFL. It's done in the National Hockey League when you get all this revenue sharing. Is that would mandate that you couldn't have Tampa walking around with a $53 million payroll if there was a floor to spending because they're getting revenue sharing money. So if everybody had to spend a minimum of 75 to 80, and you did have a top limit to control the Red Sox and the Yankees and Dodgers, but if the bottom number was 80, there'd be a lot more money for our players to go to Pittsburgh and to go to Tampa. And suddenly I think the quality of your league would get better across the board. So I'd like to see that happen just to balance out baseball a little bit more, because salary cap revenue sharing sure works in the NFL, and I think to a degree in the NBA. I definitely know it works in the National Hockey League.
Lee Hacksaw Hamilton is with us. Hacksaw, you got a Pac-12 season that's going to get started back up. I'd wonder about the view from where you're sitting. What do you think of the Pac-12 trying to make a run at this thing?
Well, they've done about as much as they can do in terms of protection of the athletes, testing, and all that. But here's the caveat to that statement, is we are now one weekend into the Big Ten season, and what just happened at Wisconsin? Their starting quarterback plays Illinois, throws 5 touchdown passes Friday night at Wisconsin, turns around and gets sick on Saturday, has now tested positive. And according to the Big Ten protocols, a lot of people don't know this, if you get a positive test, that player sits for 21 days in quarantine isolation. 21 days. It's not like you can come back, have a second test, and hope it wasn't a false positive, or you just have to have 2 negative tests in 5 days, and maybe you can come back. Their rule is 21 days now. I'm not quite sure what the protocol is in the Pac-12 right now. The Mountain West just got started this past weekend. And they've got problems before they ever got started because of bad outbreaks at New Mexico and a crisis at Colorado State. And their first weekend has already been canceled. So everybody, I think, has done as much as they can do. But I don't know that you can put this virus and this thing under anybody's thumb, regardless of how hard you try. I mean, the National Football League's done a spectacular job, but all of a sudden you saw what happened in Tennessee. And now what happened with the Raiders, and that's a big issue because those guys have now violated the protocols 4 different times. I think the next time I talk to you, the Raiders will be fined at least another $500,000 for what their players just did last week. They've got the entire offensive line put on the COVID injured reserve list. So sports has done as much as they can, but obviously we can't stamp this thing out. And all of a sudden, you've seen what's happened at Wisconsin. I keep waiting for another eruption in the Southeastern Conference, who seems to think, like President Trump, they're operating under a different set of rules.
Lee Hacksaw Hamilton, you're the best. I appreciate you. Thank you for sharing your expertise and your time.
Yeah, get a chance, check my website. I write a lot of sports every day, LeeHacksawHamilton.com. And you are correct, and I'm going to add this to your nickname of your show. No BS, BFT.
I love it. I'm on your website right now, and you're right. You're right every day. You are.
Hey, by the way, one closing comment.
Yeah.
I know that because everybody wants to be politically correct, a.k.a. the Civil War.
Yeah.
Did you ever get my note about naming it the Oregon Trail Trophy?
I like that. I like that because it goes for more than, you know, but it goes for more than football. It has to be awarded in baseball and in, you know, women's basketball and men's basketball. So I think you could call it the Oregon Trail. I like that. I like the Platypus Cup, too. What do you think about that? Too cute?
I like mine. Just send the royalty check to me.
Axel, you're the best. Thank you, man.
John, do well. I'll talk to you again, sir.
All right. There he is. We'll be bothering him down the line. Yeah, do we ever settle that? Is it like Prince, when Prince changed his name to a symbol? Are we going to say the rivalry formerly known as the Civil War? What are we going to say when it comes? We got like a month to figure this out. You got the Bald-Faced Truth, Anna Poppin in studio next. Sailing along. I look up, it's like we're in the 2 o'clock hour, and I'm like, I have so much more that I need to get to here. Need to talk about some things that are important. Anna's popped into studio. I got so much to talk about, including a a billionaire who's got Gilligan's Island on a loop to annoy his neighbors. We'll talk about that coming up, Anna. But first, truck driver Ken's called in. What's up, truck driver Ken? What's on your mind?
Oh, good afternoon, John, Anna. John, you're going to be running out of show. Your most recent guest, Mr. Hamilton there?
Yes.
I've caught him twice, and it just makes me wonder, has that guy seen everything, or does he just never stop reading? I mean, he's a wealth of information. It's incredible.
And here's the thing. I heard about the legend of Hacksaw, Truck Driver Ken, and then you get him on the show, and it's right. He has studied up on things, and I wasn't even going to have him on today. I reached out to him and said, I'm going to have you on this week, and then he said, I'm available. I'm available right now. And I said, okay, we're going to bring him on right now. And Judah, we punched him up and brought him on. Hey, Truck Driver Ken, can I ask you, what's a pet peeve of a truck driver so you can help the rest of us out there driving not be so annoying to truck drivers?
Cutting in front of us and stepping on your brakes. It's like you have a suicide pact with the devil, and you'll meet him soon if you keep that up.
Can I follow up to that? So what is the right distance if you're going to be passing a truck to leave between yourself and the truck if you're, passing in front of you?
Well, if you're just out on the open road and there's nothing that's going to thwart your progress as an automobile, give it 100 feet, but you're going faster than I am anyway. It's not that big a deal. When it is a big deal, is when the light ahead of you is red, and you absolutely insist that you're going to get in front of me to make that right turn. Don't do it. I have left that gap in front of me so that I don't use you as lubricant, because it's not really a collision as much as it's just a smear on the road.
I think if you have to think about it, if you're approaching a 18-wheeler or truck that is much bigger, the stopping distance for those things is not like the stopping distance for a normal vehicle.
No, it's not. It's like people don't even factor in the weight and velocity.
I think they do. I just think they go, well, if I can get in front of them, it's like the quarterback running out of bounds. You always see the quarterback running towards the sideline, and he gets that one extra yard, and then he dances out, and the guy can't hit him. But the problem with a truck thing, I think if you have to think about it, if you're going, is there enough room? There's not enough room.
By the way, Truck Driver Ken, thank you for doing what you do, because I think people take for granted how we get our stuff.
Yeah. You and Amazon are in a relationship over here. You're like, especially
it's not just Amazon. It's just, people are so detached from their food supply.
Yeah.
The stuff that we buy at the store. It's like, we don't even make the connection 90% of the time of how that stuff got to the store that you're buying it from. And it's just this incredible network of people like Ken and others like him that are making that work, across the country.
All right. There's a story. I appreciate that. And I relate to that. But there's a story that I want to talk about here. It's in Laguna Beach, California.
Beautiful place.
Is it snotty people too, though?
Yeah. Beautiful. Also snotty.
Snotty, beautiful people out there. But a billionaire investor is being sued by his next door neighbor in Laguna Beach. He's being accused of blasting the theme to Gilligan's Island. Judah, can you cue up the Gilligan's Island theme song for us here? But he's apparently blasting Gilligan's Island's theme song all hours of the night. And it relates to a feud over a $1 million sculpture. So apparently, neighbor number one erected a 22-foot-long sculpture with netting around it to protect it from damage. And then the neighbor said, hey, you don't have permission to put the statue up. It blocks our view. It disrupts our enjoyment of our own home. So neighbor number two started playing this theme song.
Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip that started from this tropic boy aboard this tiny ship. The mate was a mighty sailor man, skipper brave and sure. Five passengers set sail that day for a three-hour tour. A three-hour tour. The weather started getting rough, the tiny ship was tossed. If not for the courage of the fearless crew, the minnow would be lost. The minnow would be lost. The ship set ground on the shore of this uncharted desert isle. With Gilligan, the
skipper too. A millionaire and his wife.
Billionaire.
He's not the professor and Mary Ann.
All right, so there's a restraining order involved. Police have been called numerous times. You know, neighbor number two, not the statue owner, but the Gilligan's Island player, has been blaring the Gilligan's Island theme song from 9 a.m. until night, nonstop. The neighbors have exchanged messages, and the neighbor with the statue has asked the neighbor playing Gilligan's Island to knock the music off, saying it annoys us and distresses us. The neighbor playing the music has responded, saying, "Peace on all fronts, or we're just going to have nightly concerts, big boy." He wants the statue down.
Cordial.
First of all, who's right? Is it wrong to put up a 22-foot statue without your neighbors knowing about
it? Gosh, I don't know what the ordinances are in Laguna Beach. No,
forget the ordinances. Is it wrong if we put up a 22-foot statue that
22
stood in front of somebody's view?
Uh-huh.
Would you feel like, hey, is that not a good idea? Are your spider senses tingling?
Yeah, you know, that feels like you could have a higher level of consideration for your fellow neighbor, right?
I got really annoyed at one of our neighbors. They asked us to trim a tree when we moved in.
Yeah.
They asked us to trim the tree.
Mm-hmm.
I trimmed the tree. Then they said, can you trim the other branch? Then can you do, you know, and it was like all the tree was in their way of viewing us, like our house.
No, I think there was a greater view to be had without our tree.
I think they liked looking at our house and they wanted the tree out of the way. Maybe they like looking at you, you know?
Okay.
But the bottom line is, are they wrong for putting up a 22-foot statue? Start there.
Yeah. I mean, I think that might not be so considered. Do we know, dare I ask, what the statue is of? Like, that's kind of a key
I'm trying to figure
thing.
Out
Is it
that
like,
part.
You know,
it just says
what it is.
It's a sculpture.
Feels like it matters.
It's a sculpture. Like if it's a giant phallic statue, is that different?
Kind of what I was thinking. It's like that might be more of a problem than say some other less
I'm looking for a photo safe
object.
For work
photo. Like you can't just talk about the story and then not
just
say
sculpture.
What the statue is. But then this is essentially it's just rich people annoying one another. It's really why we're interested in the story, right? It's like
one of these things I want to take a side.
Most of us wouldn't have the resources to put up a 22-foot statue.
It's a glass statue, by the way.
Oh,
there glass. it is. It just looks like
It's just decorative, like seafoam glass looking stuff.
Yeah, it's just all
See,
different
yeah, that's
colors.
That's just billionaires getting on each other's nerves. But then the solution, I don't really understand why Gilligan's Island is the song. Well, to annoy the neighbor.
Maybe it's something that neighbor A thought they could live with.
Because the result of that, too, is unless you have an incredibly directional speaker,
here's the other thing.
You're also subjugating yourself to that song for hours on end.
Here's the thing. I said 22-foot sculpture. It's 22 feet in length. It's only 10 feet high.
Yeah. So it's not 22 feet high.
It's 22 feet in length. It's only 10 feet high. I don't know. I suddenly changed. I might be with the neighbor who put the sculpture up here.
Yeah.
And I was originally with the Gilligan's Island crowd. Well, now, what song would you play if you wanted to drive a neighbor crazy?
Probably something like...
we'll get Judah to cue it
heavy
up.
Heavy metal, just, you know, something Metallica.
You got
something like death metal.
You got some death metal?
You know, like the stuff that they... This is horrible, but like, isn't that the kind of music that they used to torture people?
Is that
against,
what they do?
Against Geneva Convention
because it keeps standards. Them awake. Because it keeps them awake.
Well, and eventually, if you do it long enough in a dark room, it disorients them.
Yeah, you know, would you go like, you know, a little bit? All day.
Yeah, that might grind on my nerves after the first 7 minutes.
I know what happened.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced
Truth. Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth radio show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth radio show. Thanks for listening.